Hello guys, welcome to Time with Tracy again, and this is your girl Tracy. As usual, every Tuesday, 5:30 p.m. we are here, UMFM 101.5. So definitely, those who have been here for the past weeks or those who are new here, this show is about mental health. It's about psychology facts. We get to answer all the questions you might have about psychology. We get to break down some of the psychology concepts, talk about the importance of mental health and everything to do with mental health. So let's get into it. I hope you guys are having an amazing week so far. For those who are here last week, we talked about borderline personality disorder, and it was amazing because I got to learn so much more, and I had, you know, some people reach out to me and they're like, you know, we really loved the episode. And it's amazing how much we can learn even if this show is 30 minutes per episode. So this week we are going to be diving into another disorder that is actually really common, and I hope you guys, I know this is like a disorder that's everywhere, and I feel like it's important for us to, you know, get to know more about it because it's not uncommon. So this week we are going to be talking about bipolar disorder. And for those who know already, bipolar obviously has types. I won't be getting so much into the types because of time, but I'll be giving you some highlights about it, and I will be, you know, telling you about the symptoms. I'll be telling you some bit of background about bipolar too, and definitely we can get into it now. So, originally bipolar disorder was formerly called manic depression, and this is because this disorder is marked by extreme shifts in mood. So, which means they have the extremely elevated mood, which is mania or hypomania. Hypomania is basically a bit less extreme than mania, and then they have the other mood, which is depression. So during that period where they experience mania and hypomania, they have, you know, elevated, they feel euphoric, they have so much happiness, they are very optimistic, they are, you know, wild and doing this and that and doing so many different kinds of stuff. Then when they experience the depression part, they experience like hopelessness, they don't feel happy, they do not want to they do not want to eat, they do not want to do anything. So in that period where they experience depression, that period is basically like depression, that is the standalone disorder that they experience. So one thing that has already mentioned, bipolar disorder is not really uncommon. It's actually very common. About even 5 million people have been diagnosed with it. And usually the average age when people are diagnosed with bipolar is 25 years, but obviously there are people who are diagnosed at a later age or even diagnosed at a younger age. Although bipolar is a very common disorder, it is very hard to diagnose because most times when people talk about bipolar or when people are talking about bipolar disorder in general, they usually give it in terms of bipolar disorder in women, bipolar disorder in men, bipolar disorder in children, because yes, even if they are the same, sometimes the symptoms are different, and because of the fact that it also includes depression, which is a standalone mental health disorder or something that someone can go through, sometimes if they are not diagnosed properly, they'll be diagnosed as having depression because the doctor hasn't, or because the professional may not have seen the manic side of the person who is experiencing bipolar. Usually a high manic episode can last from several days to several weeks. While, you know, some people will experience episodes of changes in mood several times a year, while other people will experience them only rarely. So, you know, the best way to diagnose bipolar disorder, it has to be continuous, because the person or the professional diagnosing, it has to be able to see the person both in their depressed state or in their depressed mood, and also in the manic mood. That's the only way they'll be able to know that, hey, I think maybe this person is, you know, struggling with bipolar disorder. So some of the symptoms of bipolar disorder, there are three main symptoms that occur with bipolar disorder, and these are the ones that we've talked about: mania, hypomania, and we've already said that while a person is experiencing, you know, mania, they are euphoric, they feel emotions on a very, very high level. So in this time, they would be having like spending sprees, or they are using drugs, or they're having unprotected sex. Basically, they are risking their lives, because in this moment, it's like they are running on this kind of fuel of dopamine. While for hypomania, it's mostly associated with bipolar type 2, which I'll be getting into a bit later episode. And then, as we talked about, during the time of depression, they have the same symptoms that a person who has depression might have: loss of energy, hopelessness, deep sadness, lack of interest in doing activities, even if they were doing them in the manic state. Right now, when they are going through the depressive state, they do not at all. They will even have suicidal thoughts during the time when they are. It is also very important to note that when it comes to gender and bipolar disorder, women and men are both equally at a risk of being diagnosed with bipolar disorder. However, as I already mentioned, the main symptoms may differ compared to like the men, and compared to the women, and compared to the teens or the children. So in women, most times bipolar disorder is diagnosed in like their 20s or 30s, and they have milder episodes of mania. So which means they experience the depressive episodes more than they experience the mania episodes. They have four or more episodes of mania and depression in a year, which is called rapid cycling. They also experience other conditions at the same time, including like obesity, anxiety disorders, migraines, and different other kinds of diseases during this time when they are experiencing bipolar disorder. Also, for the women, they have a higher lifetime risk of alcohol use disorder. Women with bipolar disorder may also relapse more often, and this is believed to be because of the hormonal changes when it comes to like menstruation, pregnancy, menopause. So all these, the fact that the hormones are affecting are also part of bipolar disorder in terms of emotions and all this. So depending on what the person is going through, it could be menstruation, it could be pregnant, it could be. So if you are a woman and you think you might have bipolar disorder, or if you know a friend or a sister or a mother, it's very important for you to know the facts, because the only way that, as I always say this every time, the only way we can be able to help someone or to fight against something or to be able to improve someone's situation is at least if we know what we are talking about. When it comes to bipolar disorder symptoms in men, men are usually diagnosed earlier in their lives. So that could mean even before their 20s. And for them, they experience more severe episodes, especially the manic episodes. So as we talked about earlier, the women experience more depressive while the men experience more manic episodes. So they'll have more spending sprees. They'll have more risky behavior. They'll have more alcohol and drug use. And most times when it comes to them, they have more substance abuse problems, and they always act out during the manic episodes. Men with bipolar disorder are actually less likely than women to seek medical care on their own. And for those who know some facts when it comes to suicide, men are more likely to die by suicide if they have bipolar disorder, or even if they do not have. It's something that we need to tackle as a community. In our next segment, we are going to be getting into these bipolar types, that the types of bipolar disorder that I was talking about. And there are three main types of bipolar disorder. There is bipolar 1, there is bipolar 2, and there is cyclothymia. So, but For bipolar 1, it's mostly defined by the appearance of at least one manic episode. You may experience hypomania or major depressive episodes before and after the main episode. And this type of bipolar disorder affects both men and women equally. So it doesn't have anything to do with, like, you know, women are more diagnosed with bipolar 1 or men are more diagnosed with bipolar 2. And why it's important, with bipolar 1, why it's important for me to say this is because as we talk about mental health and as we navigate mental health as a community, it's important for us to know that men also go through mental health issues. They also get disorders. Sometimes we just concentrate on the women because obviously women are more likely to seek professional help, but men tend not to seek professional help because sometimes they feel like they will not be believed or the community expects them not to go through disorders or not to go through tough times in their lives. So it's very important for me to mention that bipolar disorder affects both men and women equally, because it's possible, it's very important for us to look at a group of 10 people and know the same way that we have 5 women out of the 10 who could be diagnosed with bipolar is the same way we can have 5 out of 10 men who can be diagnosed with bipolar. It is also important to note that during bipolar 1 disorder or during the manic state of the manic period for a person who's experiencing bipolar disorder, this may trigger psychosis or a break from reality. Next, we're going to talk about bipolar disorder 2. People with this type of bipolar disorder experience one major depressive episode that lasts at least 2 weeks. They also have at least one hypomaniac episode that lasts about 4 days. This type of bipolar disorder is thought to be more common in women. So just to catch up on what I was saying. So in bipolar 1, the biggest time of the year or the biggest biggest period experienced is of mania, while in bipolar 2, the major one is the depressive episode. And for this one, it's more commonly thought to be in women, and this is like statistics, just to confirm. And the last one I'm going to talk about is the cyclothymic disorder. And in this one, a person bipolar has had at least 2 years or 1 year in children and in teenagers of many periods of hypomania symptoms and periods of depressive symptoms, though they are less severe than the major depression in the cyclothymia disorder. So for this one, we see that most people with this condition only experience a month or two at a time where their moods are actually. So for this one, it's expressed at a lower rate compared to bipolar 2 or to bipolar 1. When diagnosing or when discussing your diagnosis with your doctor, obviously your doctor will be able to tell you what kind of bipolar disorder you have, and in this way you can be able to monitor yourself or you can be able to monitor your friend, your family member. So it's very important when a person says, you know, they have bipolar disorder, or if someone discloses to you that, hey, I actually have bipolar disorder, it's always good to ask them, you know, do you know what kind of bipolar disorder you may have, because this gives you insight into who they are, or it gives you insight into what they are feeling. And because you have heard about it, you kind of know where to go next. One other important thing that I would like to touch on when I'm talking about bipolar disorder is that bipolar disorder is also experienced in young children. But it's very hard to diagnose, and it's very hard to kind of know or see that there might be a problem, because children don't always display the same bipolar disorder symptoms as adults, and their moods might not follow the typical standard, you know, mood charts, or when they say, you know, if a person's moods are stable, they should experience this and this and this. It's very hard to diagnose children because of that specific one, because for the children it's different and you have to know the symptoms in order to be able to recognize. Many bipolar disorder symptoms that occur in children also overlap with symptoms from a range of other disorders that occur in children, for example ADHD. So because the symptoms are similar, you might find that because when a person goes to be diagnosed, or because when a person goes to see a professional, they might think of it as ADHD when actually it's bipolar. But, you know, with the different ways that the world is growing and the world is getting to know more about mental health, doctors and mental health professionals are starting and have come to recognize the differences of bipolar disorder in children. So, in children, the manic symptoms are basically acting very silly and feeling overly happy, talking very fast and rapidly changing subjects. You know, the kid is just talking about soccer, and then they're talking about their friends, and then they're talking about class, and then they're talking about their favorite teacher, and they also have trouble focusing or concentrating. They are doing risky things or experimenting with risky behaviors. One thing I want to talk about this is that when you talk about risky behaviors, or when you talk about they are not acting themselves, whether it's in both children or in adults, it doesn't mean someone, you know, going outside the box and trying something. It means someone actually knowing that, hey, if I do this, I know it's risky. I know I'm risking my life, or I'm risking lives of other people, but they seem overly excited to actually do it. So it must be out of character for it to be something that's real. They may also have short tempers that lead to quick outbursts of anger, and they may have trouble sleeping and not feeling tired after the sleep loss. And for the depressive symptoms, you might find that the children are moping around or acting very sad. They sleep too little or too much. They have little energy for normal things, or showing no signs of interest in anything. We all know that, you know, when kids are young, they might not like cars, but they might like maybe playing on, you know, in the playground with their friends. They might like maybe driving cars either way, or they might like drawing. Kids usually have so much energy in general. But when you find that your child, or your niece, your nephew, or, you know, your foster child, or your basically anyone that's a young child is not having any interest in any of these activities, that usually shows that there's something that's wrong, and maybe you need some help, or you need to talk to the child. Some children are actually very responsive, and they'll be like, you know, I do not feel like doing this, and maybe it might give you a sign. Also, complaining about not feeling well, as I already said, maybe they are having frequent headaches or stomach aches. They're experiencing feelings of guilt. They are eating too little or too much, and they're thinking about death, maybe even possible suicide. So many times people think that children don't know what death or suicide is about, but this world actually shows them, gives them an insight about it, or it gives them, they actually understand faster than we think they do. So when you see a child, you know, being very overly fixated on death, or they are fixated on things to do with death, you can always check in and see what's happening. Are they doing okay? Is it something that they watched, or are they feeling like this in general? Some of the behavior issues you may witness in your child could be as a result of another condition. And I want us to also remember that the same way in which someone can have cough and flu is the same way in which someone might be, which someone is able to be, to have two different mental health disorders. So I know you're wondering, you know, what causes bipolar disorder? Where is this disorder from? This is a mystery to most doctors, and that's true, but most of the possible causes, according to studies, are genetics. So this is a very important statement that I want to put there. Yes, a person that has a family member, or for example, I'll give like a mother or a father who has bipolar disorder, is at a very high risk of also getting bipolar disorder. So usually that's one of the most important tells when it comes to bipolar disorder. Also, the brain structures obviously impact the risk for the disorder, and the abnormalities in our structure or the functions of our brains may increase the risk at which a person may get bipolar disorder. Or and as usual, environmental factors, you know, extreme stress, traumatic experiences like, you know, child neglect, sexual assault, and also physical illness. So a person to be diagnosed with bipolar disorder, obviously they have to meet with a professional. And the thing about bipolar disorder is it often gets worse if it goes untreated. Because in these episodes, something may happen more often and it may become more extreme. So if you know someone who has received treatment for their bipolar disorder, or if you are the person who has received treatment for bipolar disorder, it's important for you to help a person get through this, because the treatment for bipolar disorder helps that person, or helps you if you have bipolar disorder, to lead a more healthier and a more productive life. That's why it's very important for someone to get diagnosed, because they are able to get treatment. The way that it gets diagnosed is a physical exam, mental health evaluation. They also give them mood journals to kind of, you know, write down how they feel and all this stuff. So most times if like a doctor suspects that I think maybe, you know, the patient might have bipolar disorder, this is the easiest way to know how they are feeling and to keep track of how they are feeling, how they are sleeping, how they are eating, and all these different ways. Also, they use their diagnostic criteria from the DSM-5, which is used to diagnose all the mental health disorders that we've talked about, or even the others that I've not talked about. So after being diagnosed, obviously they give medications to stabilize the mood, and they give antipsychotics, mostly taken during the manic episode, or they also give the antidepressants, you know, for the depressive episodes and all this stuff. Also anti-anxiety medications, because as we said, sometimes even if a person doesn't have anxiety or they don't have depression, sometimes the different mental health disorders come with them. Like anxiety can be a symptom that is part of the bipolar disorder, even if it's a disorder on its own. So also there's psychotherapy, for example, you know, cognitive behavior therapy, there's psychoeducation, and all these other treatments which kind of helps the person change the way they are thinking, and also they do lifestyle changes. But one of the best ways that I feel a person can be helped, or you can support your friend during medication or during treatment when it comes to bipolar disorder, is supporting them. You know, being there for them, because you may find that when a person is, you know, has been diagnosed and they are taking their medication and they are doing so well, but as we know, life has setbacks, or something, it may not be fully traumatic, but something might happen to them and cause them to sort of stop taking their medicine or to have a relapse. It's so important, because this is where support from a family member, support from a friend, support from a roommate, support from a workmate comes, because maybe when they experienced this, when they went through this other experience after being okay for a very long time, it caused a setback. But when you come and talk to them, when you come and support them and say, yes, I know you're experiencing this, but I don't want you to forget how good you've been doing right now, how good you've been, how you've had this long, nice streak of, because you're taking your medications. Because sometimes, I don't know if we do realize in the community how important it is for us to support each other. And, you know, so many times we wonder, how can I support? How can I do this? Just me talking about bipolar disorder is enough to be supporting someone. Or you might be a writer, you might write about bipolar disorder, or you might a poet and you write poems about bipolar disorder. So many times a person who has a mental health disorder, even if it's not only bipolar disorder, they might feel alienated, because when they talk to someone about it, they might not have any idea, and they're like, you know, how can I talk to someone if they don't have any idea? That's why it's important. That's why I mentioned earlier that if a person tells you that they have bipolar disorder, and you ask them, you know, what type of bipolar disorder do you have? They might feel, they may end up feeling like, hey, oh, this person knows about it, so maybe I can talk to them. Yes, we will not feel or go through the same exact emotions that a person with bipolar disorder is experiencing. But as I said, it's support, 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 and endless, endless support. I also think it's very important to note that yes, someone can live a very healthy, very productive life, even living bipolar disorder. And yes, even if they have these mood swings and these shifts in moods, with the right treatment, with the right medication, yes, someone with bipolar disorder can have an amazing, stable relationship, both romantically and in friendship-wise and in family-wise. So, when you're living with someone who has bipolar disorder, or when you have a friend who has bipolar disorder, the first thing you need to do is educate yourself about it, you know, because in those ways, we see very many different articles that talk about how to help your friend living with bipolar disorder, or how to, you know, how to be an amazing partner with someone if your partner has bipolar disorder. Educating yourself opens your eyes to so much more stuff that you did not think you are able to do. And it also teaches you how to help, because yes, I personally, I've had experiences with my friends, not typically like about bipolar disorder, but in this form of like, my friend is going through something, but I don't know how to help. That's where these articles come in, and they give you ideas of how to help. And from there, you can end up building on top of that and really being able to help your family member, your friend, your sister, your brother, your cousin, anyone. Next important one is listen. You don't always have to provide answers. And even if you're not a professional, right? Sometimes advice is not really that helpful. But just listening to the person speak out their views, listening to them from their own point of view, you know, showing them that you're here to listen to them because they have a voice. Their voice matters is always important. So actively pay attention to what they are saying. Stay calm during their conversations and avoid arguments or topics that might irritate or frustrate them. Also, be a champion. For most people with bipolar disorder, it is very common for them to feel like the world is against them. So you reminding them, you sending them a text and, you know, telling them, hey, I'm here for you. I hope you remember that. Or it could be like, you know, we should go for a run, or we should go for this event, or just always being there with them and assuring them that you'll be there for them throughout the tough times. You may not always agree with their behaviors, because obviously they're a bit difficult sometimes, but telling them that you'll always have their back is what is most important, because we do know what it's very hard for someone to already be going through a tough time and to feel like there's no one with them, or no one to be who will support them throughout everything. Be active in their treatment. This is always a huge part, because treatment is a huge part of the bipolar disorder, because it helps them manage their swings, their mood swings. So this could be, you know, setting an alarm for both on your phone and on their phone, or even setting an alarm for them. You're like, you know, since you've started medication and maybe you're still working, you might end up forgetting. So let me set the alarm for you. Or, you know, calling them. It doesn't have to be every day. You could call them after a week, or you call them on a Friday or over the weekend, and you're like, so did we manage to take out all our medication for the week? And they'll be like, yes. And then you'll be like, oh, that's amazing. That's amazing that you took your medication. I'm happy that you're supporting yourselves and all this stuff. Always, one last thing is, you can make a plan, you know, talk to them and say, you know, when you're not feeling very okay, the plan is you can call me. Or if I do not pick up, you can call maybe your brother or sister. Always having a plan is important, and always, because anything can happen, but having a plan prepares you for the future. So I hope with this that what we've talked about is, you know, was helpful, and I wish I could talk more about it, because there's a lot to say about this topic, but for now I have to go. Thank you so much for joining me today, and I cannot wait to see you guys next week on Tuesday. Have an amazing week. Thank you so much, and that's goodbye for now.